Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Ryan O'Halloran.
That's right, Mike Dempsey in the wind. We'll be today and tomorrow. He'll be back next week, and then I'm out of here for my 1 week that I take off a year. Essentially, but I'll be going up to the D.C. area next week, so I won't be in, so you won't hear Mike and I together here for a while, but today I'm in with Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union. How's the offseason treating you for another week?
It's going quick. By the way, I pulled a Brent Martineau today. I got here about 90 seconds before airtime.
Yeah, Martineau is beyond that sometimes. Like, we would have the opening segment when he was... It was me, Mike, and Brent, and he would show up like right as the like second segment was starting. So if we were doing crosstalk, that he was never in the building for crosstalk, never even in the building when we were doing that opening segment of the show. That second one, he'd walk in the door, usually right as we were starting that segment. So you pulled a bit of an early Martineau even today.
Yeah, but was tied up with something this morning, so I got here. Didn't catch a light as usual, but we're here, and we are inching our way toward camp, I guess, which would be 3 weeks from today on the field?
3 weeks from tomorrow.
31st?
31st,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so 3 weeks from today, they report on the 30th.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but so far, no Jaguars have been playing with fireworks.
Oh, my goodness. I you know, those stories have been crazy. July 4th happens every year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it hasn't happened before,
right.
I guess.
The holiday happens every year, and this year we have two players, one of them a very prominent player in Jason Pierre-Paul. The news came out this morning that he actually had to have his right index finger amputated, that he broke some bones in his right thumb. As well, and apparently the Giants find out about the amputated finger on Twitter. So nobody from JPP's camp is communicating with the Giants about how severe the injury is and the process that he's going through.
Yeah, I mean, when the Giants go down there and they're not granted an audience with the player, he said, okay, maybe there is some big damage. I don't get how I don't know the mechanics of holding an exploding firework in my hand, how that breaks bones, and I know how it would burn a finger off, but
sure.
So, you know, I imagine you need all your digits to be a pass rusher so you can get into a guy's pads. You know, but so we'll see how this. You know, the Giants are on a spot now. Okay, they have that franchise tag out there. That they pull the offer, and make JPP a free agent. I don't think they do that till they at least visit with them. If I'm Jason Pierre-Paul, I sign that franchise tag in 2 seconds. I would, regardless of which hand it is.
Right. Just give me that money for this year, and then we'll worry about all the other stuff later. And look, essentially, it was going to be curious to me to see whether Pierre-Paul, without the injury, was going to, if there wasn't a long-term extension, when he would report to Giants camp. You know, how long does he wait to sign that tender? And if I was a franchise player, honestly, I'd wait. Mm-hmm. I'd wait until probably a week or two in the training camp before I put myself in there, exhausting myself. If they're going to pay me the same thing, I'm not getting paid anymore to practice in training camp. And if I'm a guy like JPP or Dez Bryant, especially a guy like Dez Bryant, who is already comfortable in this offense and knows exactly what his role is going to be, if I can get a week or two where I'm not having to be out there and beat myself to death in training camp, I would.
My only rub on that is I would advise a guy to sign it around this time, just because when it comes to this kind of contract that you want, it does take a lot of good faith on each side. And I think this would be a good fit. Okay, I'm signing a tender. I'm fully guaranteeing $15 million. I'm never going to make that in a season, regardless of what I sign. So you go in, okay, hey, I'm here. That still gives you a little bit of time under the rules to hammer out a long-term deal. But on the other side is it doesn't happen hardly ever in the NFL, a guy signing the franchise tender and playing it out.
Right.
You know, say, hey, if I'm Dez Bryant, do I sign it and say, okay, I'm going to sign it, guys. I'm going to report to on time like you guys want me to. I'm going to play hard for you guys. But then I'm going to hit the open market. You can tag him again. So, but –
sure.
If I'm JPP now, it's like I sign it pronto.
Oh, yeah, yesterday. Yeah. As soon as they'll give me the paper and put it in front of me, if I have to snatch it out of a Giants representative hands and sign it while we're sitting there, and then, it's done. There's nothing you can do about it now. Just find a way to get it signed because, like you said, he is a pass rusher. You need those hands. He's more of an athletic guy, so maybe he can get away with it a little bit more than most guys, but it is going to be one of the most interesting stories. This is a guy that was going to be a sought-after commodity on the free agent market, one of the highest-paid players in the free agent market. Mm-hmm. He winds up getting franchised by the Giants. Now he blows off a finger on one of his hands. What does he look like? This is still a very young, rising player in this league. What does he look like going forward?
And, you know, and sort of, you know, spin it the other way. Let's say he had hit the market and he signed a big deal with somebody else. He probably wouldn't have gotten Sue money, but I think he would have been close because he adds that sack dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're Team A who spent all this money on JPP.
Right.
You know, you have grounds to void the contract, I would think. So the Giants have to feel bad, but they wouldn't feel as bad as if a new team had given him a long term deal and all of a sudden your premier pass rusher is blowing a finger off
his
hand.
Right. At least it is just a 1 year thing, whatever's gonna happen with JPP at this point. The fan feedback spotlight today, we are asking Jaguars fans. We have a different question we put up every day. Today we're asking fans outside of wins, all right, because I think a lot of people expect a big jump forward for the Jaguars in wins this year, and we'll get into how fair that is here in just a couple minutes. But outside of wins, where do you expect the Jags to take the biggest step forward statistically in 2015? And I think this goes into a conversation about, you listen to a lot of Jaguars fans, and we talk to them every day here, where this is a 3-win team last year, and I think there's an expectation from the fan base that they're going to win somewhere between 6 and 8 games in 2015. I think that's where the expectations
are. That's a high expectation.
Right, for this football team in 2015. So on Tuesday night when I was doing my show, I took a look at where they were statistically in the league.
Terrible.
Right, and just where they would have, how much they would have to improve on some of these major statistical categories to get to middling, right, to get to the middle of the pack in the league, which is around where an 8-8 team would be, generally speaking, right? Is middle of the pack statistically in the National Football League. And it's not a pretty picture, right? Because they were, especially on the offensive side of the ball, just so bad last year. So the question now becomes, what are the important, like the most important places to look at when you're looking for a team to improve from 3-13 to winning 6, 7, 8, 9 games in 1 year? What are the major statistics that they need to be that much more efficient in going from 1 year to the next? I think that there are a few indicating statistics about how good or bad a football team is, and some of the fans have hit on them already with some of their responses. But I want to get into that with you a little bit today, Ryan, just some of the statistical areas where you think they need to improve the most if they're going to go from a 3-win team to a 6, 7, 8 win team, and what are the areas where you expect them to improve the most from 2014 to 2015?
Yeah, that's two. I'll probably have two different answers on you on that, but I was just taking a look to get to middle of the pack in scoring. They would look like they'd have to score 7 more points a game.
It's a touchdown a game.
It's a big ask.
Yeah, and I haven't had the chance to do the research to figure out how many teams have improved by a touchdown in one season to the next. And
that's
what do we
one
have?
Of my projects that we're going to be putting in the paper at some point between now and September 13th.
It sounds like it doesn't happen much.
Yeah, there. It's weird. For the good side for the Jaguars fans, and I cut it off at 15.6, mm-hmm. which is what the Jaguars at what they did the next year. I have not found a case where a team got worse. That said, it's tough to get worse, but I think the mean average is going to be 3 to 3.5 to 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple ones that jump off the page because they had a new offense, new quarterback, et cetera. So it's not unprecedented,
mm-hmm.
but it is going to be tough to improve by 7 points a game. The history's not working for them
sure.
on that.
And if you want to send in your answers to the fan feedback spotlight question today, you can at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday, you can respond. And on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, it's 641-1010. The phone lines are open to you if you want to talk a little
bit. Take some calls.
That's right. Talk a little bit about where they need to improve the most if this team is going to reach the kind of heights that we're talking about. And I get look, it's the NFL. It's the off season. There's enthusiasm in all 32 places right now. It's just the way it works. There are fans that are going to be believers, and it's the reality smacks you in the face when you start playing football games a lot of times. And look, we're getting close to training camp. Like you said, 3 weeks from tomorrow, these guys are going to be back out on the field. So how realistic are the expectations that the fans have put on this 2015 team? And I think looking at something like where they were statistically compared to where you expect them to be in 2015 is a good barometer for how realistic those expectations could be.
Yeah, I mean, if you go – and here's the thing about football preseason that's unlike the other major sports is the injury factor. Baseball and spring training, you know, you could lose a guy for a Tommy John or a guy's a slow start to the season. In football, there's more attrition right off the hop.
Yeah.
So the dynamic of a dynamic of a team can change drastically from the beginning of July to mid-September when week one starts. So this is what makes this sport great is the roller coaster nature of it in terms of fan opinion, media opinion, etc. So, but right now, is my expectation is, and I picked the whole schedule last week for every team, is I got these guys going 6-10, which will be doubling their win total. But also, they still don't have the depth to sustain a lot of injuries. So if they can get to 7, I think that would be a rousing success and really would set up 2016 for higher expectations. What I'm more fascinated about right now is, okay, how do they play in that opener? Because those first two games at home, it'd behoove them to win one of those.
Yeah.
If not both.
And we've talked about this with John Osier over the course of the last couple of weeks. You're talking about a new offense.
Which is always a transition.
Right. What's it going to look like? Right? Like, how much can they get that installed and feel comfortable with what they're going to be doing on that side of the ball throughout a training camp and four games in the preseason? And does it mean that you play the guys that you expect to rely on a little bit more in preseason because you want them to be on the field and get those live reps? There are some interesting decisions this team's going to have to make getting ready for what I think are two crucial games. If you're going to be a competitive team in 2015, those two home games to start are crucial for this team to get off on the right track.
What's going to be a great subplot for us to follow, starting with the first preseason game, is when a new offensive coordinator comes in, they go one of three ways. They run their regular stuff because that's what they're going to do in the preseason. They run nothing because they want to surprise the first couple of opponents, okay? Mm-hmm. That means you better be repping in practice, or they run as much as possible to A, get live game snaps on those plays, but also to make sure Carolina, Miami, et cetera, early in the season, they have to prepare for a lot of stuff. I think Greg Olsen will be somewhere in between those two extremes. Mm-hmm. I think he feels that it's important for his young quarterback and his young offense to get a lot of the reps of what he's going to be running on a regular basis. But I don't think you're going to see them playing their starters abnormally.
Okay. And we'll see. Again, it's a story that'll develop over the course of training camp. I don't know that you play them more either.
Half, three quarters, none.
Right. And it's because of, you know, what we were just talking about with football compared to a bunch of other sports, the risk of injury that is really there, and you don't want to expose yourself more than you have to.
Yeah.
But they're in an interesting situation with trying to figure out how to get this thing ready for day one against Carolina. Throughout, they basically have this 5 weeks to get them completely ready. And we'll see how ready they look once we get started with training camp and how much everyone really did soak in of that offense during the offseason. Mm-hmm.
And also, if you come out of that third preseason game, if Gus feels like the starters have done their work, especially in offense, okay, they've built some confidence, built some momentum. You sit them out the last game. Well, let's say they... You know, let's say things don't go well those first three preseason games. Does he feel he needs to trot them out for a series or two just to get something positive
right
going into the regular season? That's why I think that third game's important. Move down the field, get some good things going, and then we'll see you September 13th.
We'll get into the training camp schedule, which came out a couple days ago, the practice moving over from Bartram Trail to Mandarin as far as the off-campus practice this year for the Jaguars, as well as some of the other news and notes from that with Ryan O'Halloran as we continue along on the program. But coming up, want to get into this, really dig into the idea of where they need to improve the most statistically, outside of just the win-loss column, obviously, but the most statistically, what are the most telling stats for a football team as far as success, and where do we expect the most improvement for this Jacksonville Jaguars football team between 2014 and 2015. Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union joining me here. He will be with me up until noon today. Mike Dempsey out today and tomorrow. I'm Fat Tony. Ryan O'Halloran alongside as we continue along here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
How much more comfortable do you feel, you know, this year compared to last?
Oh, man, it's crazy. You know, going into year two, it feels a lot different as far as just playing with a lot more confidence and you know what to expect. Like, the game is moving a lot slower now. You're recognizing coverages before they even get started and things like that. So it's moving a lot slower, and I feel a lot comfortable now.
Now, second-year wide receiver Allen Hurns, which is a common theme on this team, second-year wide receiver, joining Jeff Prosser this morning on The Drill. Talking about that transition from year one to year two, we talk about how important that is for these guys, and that term, the game slows down for them. You hear people use it all the time. I think it's just basically a measure of how much more comfortable they are with the way the game is played between year one and year two. It's almost like you're given this overload of information to try to compete at the NFL level, and you're trying to do everything the exact right way, and at some point I think you get out of your own head a little bit and just start playing football again, and that's basically what that discussion's about. Wouldn't you agree, Ryan?
Yes. Allen Hurns is going to be an interesting guy this year. He got his opportunity last year because of injuries and made a lot of big plays, but if I'm him, when Jed Fish got fired, who was responsible for bringing him here, I'm like, okay, now what? I got to start all over again. You have the same position. Coach Jerry Sullivan has a great amount of trust in him. For Allen, it's going to be, I'm going to be seeing it. Okay, what's his playing time like? If they say they go too tight end a lot, that usually means there's only two receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they go empty 60% of the time, which I don't think is going to happen. So,
right.
So if I'm does Hurns... It's just going to be interesting to see how many opportunities he gets, how much is he on the field percentage-wise,
right,
and how this offense evolves, because he's proven that if you give him the chance, he will make plays. So, if he has a good camp, that's why a couple of people raised eyebrows when I put him ahead of Marquise Lee on like a wide receiver depth chart from head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
I would put him there because he's done it. So, if Greg Olsen feels differently, we'll know pretty soon in camp.
Yeah, and with the idea that they seem to be committed to keeping Marquise Lee on the outside as opposed to playing in the slot, Allen Hurns showed that he's a pretty effective player for them in that slot. And it's how much more effective is he in year two than Rashad Greene is in year one? I think there are a lot of questions about the amount of opportunities Allen Hurns is going to have, but those are okay questions to have with a guy that you're talking about being, you know, your third or fourth even wide receiver, is where are we going to get him opportunities to play? It's not a conversation you've had in Jacksonville in the last 4 or 5 years. Is when can we get our fourth receiver on the field?
As usually it's because he's got to play.
Right.
Everybody else is hurt.
Right.
Or suspended or not playing well. So, you know, that how they use Hurns is going to be interesting. Whether Marquise can stay on the field, that's going to be interesting. And also Rashad Greene, how are they going to use him just inside? Is he going to be a punt returner?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of moving parts at the receiver spot after Allen Robinson. But that means they have better depth because, you know, last year we sort of knew which guys. 2 years ago, same thing. This year you sort of know the five, but it's going to be a horse race to that sixth spot.
No doubt. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. We will continue our trek through the Jacksonville Jaguars regular season schedule. We'll go up to Indianapolis here in about 15 minutes, talk with Derek Schultz from WNDE up in Indianapolis again here in about 15 minutes. But talking about that depth at the wide receiver position kind of leads into the big discussion I wanted to have today about where they need to improve statistically. I think there's an idea that there's going to be this big leap forward as a team from 2014 to 2015, and a lot of that is predicated on a bunch of first-year guys becoming second-year guys, and like Allen Hurns said there, the game's slowing down for 15 people on this team, right? I mean, I think that's the idea of the big leap forward for this football team. So when you look at it, before we get into where you think they need to have the biggest leap forward, if they're going to make that kind of jump from 3 to 6, 7, 8 wins, where do you expect the Jaguars to improve the most in 2015?
Well, let's stick on offense first.
Sure.
And I'll backtrack 1 second. Is when I was talking to Dave Caldwell a couple weeks ago, I said, was last year's issues on offense, specifically up front, was it personnel or experience? And he thought it was a mixed. He thought it was more inexperience. So that means they're banking on guys to get better. Yes, they added Julius Thomas, Jeremy Parnell, drafted T.J. Yeldon, but
they recognize weaknesses that they still had, even
also,
with the youth.
Yeah, right. So they said, okay, we need to add players A, B, and C, but we also expect returnees A, B, and C to get better. So you combine those two, and you hope to get better. As far as the statistics on offense, 71 sacks, I expect that to be lowered.
Do you have a number where you think will wind up? It's hard to say. We haven't seen these guys
yeah,
together.
I still think it's going to be high because that's another research project I've done is you look at the top 10 sack teams of all time, how much they improved the previous year. I say if you can go from 71 to 45, that would be a hell of a jump. I still think there may be close. I think they could still reach 50 because I still think they're going to have to throw more they can run it based on the how competitive they're going to be. So sacks is the big one. If they can cut that by 25%, I think that'd be a victory under Doug Marrone in his first year coaching the O-line. And then the other one would be points. I mean, 15.6. Just to give you an example of how bad that was, Oakland is at 15.8. But after that, you go four teams up, you're getting up to 18.7. So 28 more teams average at least 3 points better. That's one scoring possession.
Yeah,
so,
it really is. And if you're looking at improvement, I know we've talked about that number of they need a touchdown a game. So they need to get to 22. That would put them right in the middle of the pack in the National Football League. But if they can improve by, say, 4 or 5
say
points.
Five,
a game,
let's say 5 points.
Which is that mean average you were talking about in the last segment about what teams generally improve if they do improve. If they get to that point, then you are talking about being 20th, 21st in the league in scoring.
Yeah, like last year, if you, let's say the Jaguars averaged 5 more points a game this year, that puts them at 20.6. That puts them 18th in the league. That would put them ahead of teams like Minnesota, St. Louis, Detroit, Chicago, Arizona, San Francisco, Washington. So
Detroit and Chicago being down there is weird.
Exactly.
Last year.
So you make a positive step forward, and then you can make another step forward. But what skewed the Jaguars' point average last year, made it lower, is they didn't have an outlier game where they lost 44-41.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's what saved the 2012 team. From their point futility was they had one game in Houston where they did score 38, I think. So,
right.
If they can have one or two games where they go 35, that'll automatically push you up a little
bit. And stop having to depend so much on the defense for scoring the way they did last year. I mean, this wasn't a team that created a ton of turnovers anyway, but they created turnovers at really opportune times, and the defense created some great scoring opportunities. Like the dead zone, I talked about it all year last year. Basically, when this Jaguars team crossed the 35 of the opponent, it stopped. Mm-hmm. Like, and they moved the ball effectively virtually the entire – once Blake Bortles came into the lineup, they moved the ball pretty effectively from their own end of the field to about midfield and towards that dead zone, and then it just hit a wall where it's like they didn't know what they wanted to do. And I think it was more about being a team that didn't have any identity as to – this is what we do really well. It was we can kind of junk ball it down the field, and now we get to the part of the field where we're a running team. We're a short passing team. We are who we are, and it's like they had no idea what the answer to that question was in 2014. Will they have an answer in 2015? We'll find out.
Well, 31st in red zone percentage, only the Jets were worse. I think that was a big reason why you splurged on Julius Thomas. He creates bad matchups all over the field. He creates really bad matchups inside the 20 and in the end zone. So I would expect that to improve. And also I would expect it to improve because over the last 2 years, they were in a position where they had to go for it on fourth down in the red zone.
Right.
In the third and fourth quarter of games. So, you know, if you keep drives alive, you'll have a chance to score more touchdowns.
Before we get to some of your thoughts on the defensive side of the ball and the key statistics, let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today. And let's welcome in Will, who has dialed us up at 641-1010. Hey, Will.
How you guys doing this morning?
Doing good, well. Will.
Great. Hey, man, I love you guys' show, man. It keeps me going. Expectations.
Hey,
expectations are not highly. They're not high. Six games is reasonable. The reason why I think, as you guys were saying, those 5 points, 5.5 points, to make a difference. And with my concept of thinking, and you kind of took my thunder there, Julius Thomas was brought in just for that reason. Mismatch inside the red zone, or the dead zone, which we would call it. And I see it's all on our quarterback. If Bortles can take a nice step, all we need him to take is a rookie year Andrew Luck step. That's what we want. His second year to be Andrew Luck's rookie year. That's not asking too much, is it? That's all I'm saying. If he can give us that kind of play on his second year, I don't see – it's about the quarterback. He has enough weapons. He has a tight end that's a threat. We can go double tight end with Mercedes Lewis and Julius Thomas and then have Robinson or whoever outside wide. We got possibility of run. I see the threats now a little bit. They're young, but you don't mind getting them on Madden now. You can grow with them now, you know. And that's all I wanted to say, man. I love the show, man.
Appreciate the call, Will.
Good points. I mean, I think the Thomas thing is going to be a season-long storyline. Andrew Luck's rookie year, 23 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, 76.5 rating.
I'd like that INT number a little lower than that.
And his completion percentage as a rookie was 54.1. So I think they want that higher here. Luck's second year, 60%, 23 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. So I think Blake, like, a successful year for him would be touchdowns in the mid to high 20s. And I think if he throws in the teens of interceptions, like 13, 14, 2-1,
yeah,
that would be a success.
And by the way, if he threw 25 touchdowns this year, he'd be the franchise record holder.
Wow, really?
For touchdowns in a year. I mean, that's where the quarterback play has been.
Well, I'm going to say he gets that.
Right.
Bold prediction.
I think he's going to be around that kind of number. Those are kind of my expectations for Blake this year, too, is 24, 25 touchdowns with 14 or 15 interceptions. That's around the numbers I expect him to be at. We're going to welcome in Derek Schultz here in just a couple minutes. Let's get one more phone call in. Before we do that, though, Gary has called up. He's got a comment on the question of the day. What's going on, Gary?
Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted, first of all, Ryan, with all due respect, you said as a Dolphin fan that, well, the Jags had the football for 17 out of the 21st place, but they couldn't do anything with it. But that's what losing teams say. That's the kind of rhetoric losing teams say, because the Dolphins, I believe, led the NFL in red zone appearances last year. That's the reason they went out and got their version of Thomas with Jordan Cameron to help in the red zone. But I mean, that's what separates losing teams from winning teams. The winning teams convert in the red zone, and the losing teams don't.
Well, sure.
Is this from last week, Gary? Did you been saving this all week for me?
Yeah, until you came back.
I gotta look up that box now. You gotta give me a heads up on this so I can look up the box.
But
by the way, Gary, you are right. Is losing teams do it just enough to get this to be disappointed?
Right.
Exactly. I know. Well, I'm good as a Dolphin fan because, as I said, they moved the ball, but something would always happen in the red zone, and that's why they went out to try to improve the weaponry around Tannehill. I still don't say the Jags did enough to help Bortles. I still say that they blew the boat not drafting
Cooper,
but that's the way it is. But it obviously starts with the offensive line giving up less sacks and Blake Bortles getting the ball out quicker. Why does New England and Denver's offense move fast? They do quick passing plays. Where basically most of their passing plays are the result. The defensive line doesn't have a chance to sack the quarterback because they're quick reacting, quick tossing plays where, you know, they're quick developing. developing where the defenses don't have time to get in there and sack Manning or Brady, and that's what they need to work more about doing. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Gary. A couple points, Gary. First one, I looked up the first quarter box score, Dolphins-Jaguars last year. Yards, 132-3, Jags. Plays, 22-6, Jags. Score, 0-0. That sums it up. In terms of the short passing, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of that in there. But also, if they do that, there's going to be a lot of calls the next week on this show. Well, why aren't they throwing it deep?
Right.
So if you can turn that yard, if you can turn those short passes into yards after catch, then okay, then you can have that as a regular
nobody
part.
Cares if you're scoring points. If you're scoring points and winning games, they don't care what the offense looks like getting to that point, right? Because New England's made a living out of throwing the ball 5 yards. I mean, that's what Tom Brady has been doing for the last 5 or 6 years. Now, he threw the ball deep to Randy Moss, right? Because they had options to throw it short and then could go over the top to one of the best deep threats the NFL has seen in the last 15 years. But it doesn't matter. If you're scoring points and winning games, everyone thinks the offense is great. When you're losing games, we're all trying to find reasons why they stink right now. Derek Schultz coming up next. He's going to talk with us a little bit, talk about what's going on up there in Indianapolis. We talked about Andrew Luck a moment ago. He's got some new shiny weapons. Well, they're old, but they're new to him. We'll talk about that as we go along here on Jaguars Today, next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Going to use an inside the business term, efforting.
Call.
Efforting Derek Schultz from up there in Indianapolis. I'm Fat Tony, that voice you just heard, Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union on Jacksonville.com, who covers the Jags beat for them. And while we're efforting Derek Schultz, let's get back into this whole Jaguars statistical discussion. We talked about the offensive side of the ball and the stats where you think you'll see the most improvement. What about defensively, where they were better statistically defensively than they were offensively? Still weren't great. They were a lot closer to middle of the pack in a lot of the defensive categories last year, though, than they were on the offensive side of the ball. Do you think with the changes that they made this offseason that we're going to see a great statistical step forward from the defensive side of the ball? For me, I think more of my questions about where is the growth coming, like where is the step forward coming, are on the defensive side of the ball as opposed to the offensive side.
Yeah, I mean, I have, when we talked about this last week, I would have some concerns on defense right now. I mean, the one statistic that they need to improve is interceptions, tied for fewest in the league last year with 6. And that's why you sign a guy like Devon House, who they project as a number one type corner. You know, look at the other stats, 26th in yards, that's got to be better. 27th against the run, that's got to be better.
Yeah.
And is that going to be better right away with Miller? Is he going to be full strength? Is Mark's going to be full strength? Is Audric going to be up to speed at his new position and his new scheme? So those are just a couple. But number one would be interceptions. And I think it's going to be tough. I think we've talked about this before. It's going to be tough to match the sack production that they did last year.
Yeah, I think it will be. We'll get back to the Jaguars and especially that defensive side of the ball, some of the big questions we have about it here in just a couple minutes. But right now, going to head on up to Indianapolis. Derek Schultz from Fox Sports 97.5 joining us here to talk a little bit about those Indianapolis Colts. Derek, how are you today?
Great, Tony and Ryan. Great to talk to you guys.
Hi, Derek.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time. I guess the big question is, this is a Colts team that since Andrew Luck got there has been a playoff team. They're playing in a weak AFC South, or at least they have been, and it appears to be that is the case again in 2015. But they've taken one step further every time. Is it Super Bowl or bust in Indianapolis right now?
Yeah, I mean, the expectation is for them to get to the Super Bowl and take the next step, like you said, because it would just be the natural progression. As you mentioned, 2012, they shocked everybody, won 11 games, got in the playoffs, were one and done, but still, that was a team that was coming off a 2-14 season and a complete rebuild. Year two, they win a playoff game, they get to the divisional. Year three, they win 2 playoff games, including going to Denver and beating their former quarterback in Peyton Manning and the Broncos and get to the conference championship game. So naturally, the next step is, yeah, break through and get to the Super Bowl. I don't know if, you know, the word and bust to me means that it's like a last hurrah. When I think of Super Bowl and or bust or championship or bust, I think of teams that are old, that this is their last. I think of like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and the Ray Allen Celtics teams when they were clearly on their last legs, or the Spurs, or, you know, Denver last year. This is a team that still, the core of it, is very young, and they're going to have a lot more bites at the apple to win championships. So is it the biggest failure in the world if the Colts don't win the Super Bowl this year? No, but the expectation is, yeah, absolutely, for them to get to that game.
Derek, let's start in free agency. Obviously, they made the splash with Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, but I think Todd Harriman's at right guard, veteran. How much did they need to solidify that interior line to protect Luck?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you mentioned his name because he's overlooked. He's not as, even though he just posed nude in the ESPN body issue, he's not as sexy, if you will, as Frank Gore and Andre Johnson. But you're right, the big bugaboo for the Colts, at least offensively, with a unit that was one of the better offenses in the entire league last year, was the fact that the interior of their offensive line was a complete disaster. It was a rotating door. They didn't know what they were going to do at center. They've mixed starters in there. Hugh Thornton, who was a second-round pick a couple of years ago at the guard spot, can't seem to hold down a starting job there. So it had been kind of a mix and match, whereas they felt good about their two tackles in Anthony Costanzo and Goster Cherilis. The three interior spots were just kind of every single week there was somebody new back there. So getting Harriman's, I think, was an under-the-radar signing, but one that was really important for them to solidify not only their starters up front, but also the depth just overall, because the Colts have had this knack for suffering a lot of injuries to that unit on the offensive line. So just adding another body there, I think, was important, much less another starter like they were able to get in Harriman's.
Yeah, I hope everyone noticed the lack of keyboard clicking when you mentioned Todd Harriman's and the body issue. We weren't all rushing to go see exactly what that's going to look like. Derek Schultz from Fox Sports 97.5 joining us up in Indianapolis. And a lot of talk about the other two big pieces in offense and free agency, Andre Johnson and Frank Gore. From afar, to me, it's felt like this is a Colts team for the last handful of years that wanted to be a team that could run the ball and just hasn't been able to find the pieces to allow them to do that and take some of the pressure off of the young quarterback in Andrew Luck. Do they feel like they finally found that release valve in Frank Gore?
Yeah, I think they hope so. The Trent Richardson experiment obviously was a train wreck and did not work out for them. But I think the Colts didn't do themselves any favors by trying to be something that they weren't. When Pep Hamilton first came here to take over for Bruce Arians when he took the Arizona job as the offensive coordinator, he was coming from Stanford. And what do we know about Stanford football? It's kind of, you know, 4 yards in a cloud of dust, kind of ground and pound offense. And here you have Andrew Luck in this wide open passing attack and T.Y. Hilton, who's a big play threat. And you've got flour and eggs and milk, and instead of just making a cake, you're trying to make like a green bean casserole. And that's what the Colts were doing in 2012 and 2013. I think last year you saw them open it up and realize that, hey, Andrew Luck's going to throw 40 times, and we're going to try to get vertical and get up and down the field. And it worked really well. This was, as I said, one of the better offenses in the entire league. So playing to the strengths of your personnel, I think finally we're seeing Chuck Pagano and Pep Hamilton bury the old school approach and open it up to the fact that these are the guys that we have. Let's maximize their strengths. And throwing the ball and scoring a lot of points is the strength of this offense. So adding Gore into that mix, not to be a 1,500-yard rusher, but to just be a complement and somebody that teams have to actually fear, I think is really important. And it'll pay dividends for the passing attack, which we already know is going to be one of the best in the league.
Sticking with the passing attack, Derek, at receiver, Johnson's a veteran. Moncrief, second-year guy. Everybody knows what T.Y. Hilton can do. Griff Whalen's carved out a niche. Yet they go Philip Dorsett. To me, I didn't get it. Why should I get it?
I didn't get it either, and it might have something to do with the fact that T.Y. Hilton's in a contract year, and Dorsett is believed to be a guy that is basically T.Y. Hilton light. So maybe the Colts use that pick to protect themselves in case Hilton wanted to break the bank and they weren't willing to do so, because they've got a lot of extensions that are due. They've got to obviously sign Andrew Luck. Anthony Costanzo's due a lucrative extension. The tight ends and Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener, they're probably going to want to bring back. So there are a lot of guys that they have to pay here, and maybe Hilton doesn't fit into their plans moving forward. That's the only rationale that I can think of, because it was a luxury pick. It wasn't a pick where they had any sort of a need. But you now look at it, if Dorsett ends up adding, I don't know, 25, 30 catches, you've got Chris Carter's kid and Deron Carter, who played well in the CFL, who they took a flyer on. Moncrief had a very promising rookie season. Andre Johnson, you're just asking to be your number two receiver, which I think he's more than capable of doing, and he's also a big target that the Colts have lacked. And then you have your big play threat in Hilton. So personnel-wise, it's great that they're loaded to that spot. But I agree with you. I thought that that pick would have been better served, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
All right. He is Derek Schultz from Fox Sports 97.5 up there in Indianapolis. Derek, thank you for a couple minutes of your time. I'm sure we'll talk to you again before the season rolls around.
No problem, fellas. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks, Derek.
All right, that is Derek Schultz. We'll get into this date in football history, the drive around the NFL, and react a little bit to what we heard from Derek there as we roll along here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Today, on this date in football history, we celebrate a couple of birthdays, including the first man in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season.
Eric Dickerson.
O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson, the first one to do it. He did it in 1973 in just 14 games. Rushed for 2,003 yards and 12 touchdowns that year. That's 143 rush yards a game, by the way, that season in 1973. That's pretty good. 6 yards per attempt. He's not running anywhere now. Spending his days at the Lovelock Correctional Center in Nevada after a kidnapping and armed robbery conviction in 2008. So happy, what would that be, 68th birthday, July 9th, 1947, for O.J. Simpson. Another notable birthday on this date. His knee injury is the reason why we probably all know the name Kurt Warner.
Oh.
Trent Green, in 1999 in the preseason, got his knee torn up on a hit from Rodney Harrison. He celebrates his birthday today as well, born on this date in 1970. So 45 years old today for Trent Green. Happy birthday to Trent Green. Not so happy birthday to O.J. Simpson. That is this date in football history presented today by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you are just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. And that is this date in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
Well, Jason Pierre-Paul had his right index finger amputated yesterday. The surgery should allow him to return to the field in around 2 months. We also know that his thumb is broken, which may be more of a detriment than having no right index finger at all. Ian Rappaport reported the Giants had revoked their $60 million long-term contract offer, but Pierre-Paul had no intention of accepting the deal or planning to sign the franchise tag tender until he's ready to play. By doing so, JPP will preclude the Giants from placing him on the non-football injury list, a transaction that would have granted the team the right to refuse payment for a portion of the season. Another firework-related incident involving Bucks cornerback C.J. Wilson, who lost two fingers. His father says his son lost his index and middle fingers. Wilson was holding a Roman candle that blew up in his hand rather than shoot outward. And finally, last but certainly not least, we found out last month the Gronkowski family is hosting a cruise, so-called Rage Fest, and a three-day cruise fest going to the Bahamas. Well, now a promotional video has been released by Gronk himself, and just take a listen.
Yo, the whole Gronkowski family is inviting you to get hyped with us next year on a very own party cruise. We're going to park the Gronk bus for a little bit and swap it out for a big-ass cruise ship. We'll sail from Miami down to our own Gronk Island. That's February 19th to the 22nd, 2016, baby. Seriously, though, we're throwing a three-day vacation for everyone to come hang out with the family, listen to music, play some games, and get Gronk. We definitely don't want to miss this.
And, well, basically the last 45 seconds of this whole video is this EDM track in the background with camera shots of girls in bikinis partying at EDM shows and getting drunk on the beach. Basically a few of Gronk's favorite things, and you can experience it with the Gronkowski family February 19th through the 22nd. Ryan O'Halloran, will we see you on the Gronk family cruise?
That would be something, but probably not. I think that's during the NFL Combine.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hype video unless you got the air horn in there. I freaking love air horn. Oh, that's so awesome. But Gronk doing his thing, man. It's never going to stop. And this story came out a couple weeks ago that he hasn't, like, spent any of his bonus money or anything like that, his rookie signing contract money. Like, he's actually living pretty frugally for a guy who's living it up the way that Rob Gronkowski has been, at least to this point in his career. Now you have the opportunity for all the Patriots fans listening, or just you crazy psycho party kids out there, to go hang out on a cruise ship with him for 4 days.
Well, I saw that Gronk thing about his money. That's what Jay Leno always used to do. He put all his Tonight Show money right into the bank.
Yeah.
He lived off his stand-up money. And so it means you have a lot of money.
It means you got a ton of money coming in. And by the way, I know we touched on the JPP thing at the top of the show, and the thumb may be a bigger issue than the index finger. We're going to see what he looks like when he actually gets back and he's playing football. The Roman candle thing, that's terrifying. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've held a Roman candle, and I considered the idea that it may blow up in my hand at some point, but I still played around with Roman candles. But JPP, apparently, the team found out that the surgery was as serious as it was that he lost part of his finger on Twitter, and he's not talking to any of his teammates. Right now, he's not returning calls, he's not answering calls, he's not answering texts, he's not talking to anybody affiliated with the New York Giants right now. I don't know exactly what Pierre Paul is trying to accomplish.
Unless he's just embarrassed. Or depressed or something. But
well, he's going to get a nickname.
Yeah.
It's coming, JPP. I mean, just accept it.
Yeah, I don't like fireworks. I don't like guns. That's why I have all my fingers. But
you've never done anything dangerous with fireworks?
No.
No?
Hate fireworks.
You never, like, shot bottle rockets at the other neighborhood kids?
Maybe a package of Black Cats.
Okay.
That's it, though. Yeah, the freezing out his teammates, he's probably thinking, well, they're just going to tell the team. So he doesn't trust his teammates. But, yeah, it's just a bad situation.
No, it's a weird situation, right? Because when the report came out Sunday morning, I get on Twitter and I'm seeing JPP's a trending topic. And I'm like, what happened? So I click on it to see, and the fireworks story is there. And there are people that are reporting career-threatening injury for Jason Pierre-Paul.
To me, that means you lost the whole hand.
Right. Yeah. I saw something like that. It was like, he's going to lose the hand. And then slowly it started getting pulled back and pulled back and pulled back. And now we know that he's lost part of his index finger, at least, and he's got a broken right thumb. Now, what that's going to mean for him as far as playing football, we don't know. But when you go back to Sunday, when this thing started and it was, JPP is never playing football again, to... maybe we'll see if he's available at the beginning of the season or not. It's crazy just the swing this story has seen in the last 4 days.
Yeah, and like you're thinking about, you look at your hand here and you take off that finger. It's almost like, will he have to tape it up into a fist? Because you don't want to leave that much
right
of an opening. Your thumb can get really wrenched back. So, I mean, his career has been changed forever.
Yeah, and we'll see how effective a player he's going to be.
Because, like, Ronnie Lott only had, like, fingertip.
Yeah, and I know Jeff Lagerman, I've heard him talk about this before, and he said that, you know, Ronnie Lott always says in public, you know, he doesn't regret the decision to cut off that tip of his finger to stay in that game. He says, you ask him privately, I guarantee you get a different answer from Ronnie. And just because of the difficulties it's created for him in his life away from football, and we'll see, again, how much more difficult it's going to be for JPP not only to play football, but you're going to go through the rest of your life missing a digit.
I mean, you can I have a pen in my right hand. I mean, you can write without it, but you have to learn how to.
Yeah, it's going to be an adjustment. Wanted to talk to you with the training camp schedule coming out. A couple days ago, we know that they're going to officially start practice 3 weeks from tomorrow. So we're 22 days away from training camp getting started. It is blasting towards us. Friday, July 31st, that first practice open only to season ticket holders, mm-hmm. which is a bit of a different idea. And they're taking to practice that first Monday over to Mandarin High School. I know you were out there for Bartram Trail last year. Do you like the idea of them kind of moving that event around a little bit?
Well, if they're going to go out, if they're going to commit themselves to going out a little bit, I do like moving it around, give different parts of the city a chance to host the team, and in the high school will benefit from the concession sales and stuff like that. So, I do like that part. because it helps their bottom line. As far as, you know, having the part that I think is a waste of time is the scrimmage, because it's not really a scrimmage. I think that those days would be better put to scrimmaging another team and as an evaluation tool. So I like the idea of the high school practice, especially because it's not, you know, it's not too far away out of town.
Right.
But as I'm trying to open the schedule here, there had been some talk inside the building about whether to stick with the 9:55 starting time, because practices during the OTAs were impacted by the heat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was there, you know, move it back a little bit earlier, 8:30, 8:55. They stuck with 9:55. And so that part stays the same. You know, what's not on the schedule, because it's not open, is they'll probably have walkthroughs around 4:30 each day. So they're basically out there twice a day. But looking at the schedule as a whole, you know, 10 practices down from 13 open last year. But I think plenty of chances for the fans to come out, especially that first weekend. They have a Saturday open and a Sunday open in the morning, and then the next weekend, the Saturday night practice.
Yeah, and I know you said you don't like the scrimmage, but I think that's part of the reason why they do the scrimmage every year, is because there's a lot of fans that aren't going to be able to get out here for a practice at 10 in the morning on a Tuesday.
I just have it over there at night then.
Right, you know, but I think that they kind of like the idea. It's the first time the fans are getting back in the stadium. You're probably selling more concessions for that than you are for a regular practice, because you can fit more people in. It's an event more so than a practice is. I don't know how much more you get out of it, right, mm-hmm. as a team than you would just a regular practice that day. But I think for the fans, there's a little bit more to get excited about when they have it in the stadium with, you know, 15, 16,000 people here, as opposed to, you know, the 1,500, 2,000 basically they get out there for a practice every day. So I understand why they do it every year. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but that 10 in the morning practice time, I know some fans wish that they do an evening practice during the week, so they'd have a chance to get out here and see it and not have to take a half day off.
Well, that's your high school practice.
Right. Yeah. That's your high school practice. That's the scrimmage. That's Saturday. And that's the preseason games. Right? I mean, if you want to see the team, there are opportunities to come out and see the team. It may not be in that full practice mode. For me personally, I'm glad they're doing it at 10 o'clock in the morning, because that means Mike and I will be out there live every day for training camp at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, I get emails and tweets a lot from fans saying, you know, what's the best time to go? For me, if I'm a fan, I don't go until August 5th, first day in pads.
Because
that means you can see, it's not tackle football, but you're at least able to see some pass rush drills, press coverage with corners and receivers. It gets a lot more competitive on that day, because the guys have been here for a week. They're ready to hit something.
Yeah, there's a feeling out there for that first day when those guys walk out in the full pads, and especially for those positions that aren't allowed to get physical at all, really, when they're not in pads. You can feel that frustration mounting and mounting and mounting, and it's time. You know, they let it go a little bit. That's where, if you're going to see any kind of altercation, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing when guys get physical with each other during those practices. I don't think you want any, you know, rivalries developing between your teammates, but I think guys getting upset about what other guys are doing is fine a little bit, and those are the kind of days where you're going to see it, where those frustrations are allowed to boil over a little bit. I know they had a couple incidents like that last year during training.
Which is great.
Camp.
Love it.
Oh, it's fun. I had
mayhem.
I had somebody's helmet hit me. I think it was Nick Jacobs. Was he involved in one of those?
Well, it may have been Alu-Alu and Harbor.
It was. It was Harbor's helmet that hit me on the sideline while I was watching practice. I'm not sure I would pick on Tyson Alualu. He's a pretty big boy.
No. But so that's like, in, you know, in terms of, you know, if you do come before the pads are on, you know there's going to be a lot more football activity than an OTA or a mini camp.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's, if you haven't been out to one, I would encourage you to give it a shot, because it is interesting to watch.
No, it is. And if you're a football fan, there's something to take out of it, even when they don't have the pads on. But it feels like football once those pads come on and they get ready to go at it full force for a regular season contest to open things up against the Carolina Panthers. Want to ask you about Notre Dame and Navy?
Wait, real quick. Duval Doom tweeted us, be cool if preseason games weren't on Friday nights, high school football. Pittsburgh game, August 14th. I don't think that impacts high school football, or does it?
I don't think so.
And then the Detroit game, valid point, but CBS took that one for national TV, so that moves up from Saturday to Friday. So that was sort of out of the Jags' hands. I think 2 years ago they played the third preseason game on a Saturday night, and last year they were on the road on a Friday night. But I do think they tried to avoid that.
Yeah, I think third or fourth week of preseason is when it would start interfering with high school football if it's going to. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure if it's the same schedule in Georgia, like when they have their jamborees or whatever scheduled. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, that's out there. I want to talk about Notre Dame and Navy and the impact that could potentially have on the Jaguars, and continue to talk about statistically where this team needs to take those big steps forward. Ryan O'Halloran joining me from Jacksonville.com and the Times Union. He covers the Jaguars for them. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey on vacation for the rest of this week. I think he's playing, I don't know, Sawgrass. Maybe you've heard of it. Today was his plan with the day off, so he'll be back on Monday here on Jaguars Today. We'll get back into your Jacksonville Jaguars, Notre Dame, Navy. What's that mean for these guys as far as scheduling, as well as Jaguars statistical breakdown as we roll along here on a Thursday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you on a Thursday. If you want to get involved with the fan feedback spotlight today, you can. The question we're asking here on a Thursday is, outside of wins, where do you expect the Jaguars to take the biggest leap forward statistically in 2015? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Tyler. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. Also on the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. On the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, Ryan, I don't know if you have an update on this or not, but someone asked if we can please get some update on the status of Dante Fowler and where he's at in his recovery slash rehab.
Well, he's last time I was here, which was last Thursday, he was in the building, so he's reached that rehabilitation stage. And in terms of an update, I don't have him. They would tell you he's on schedule, but yeah, obviously they're going to be taking baby steps because sure. there's no rush to get him back.
What about Cindric Marks? Have you heard anything about him?
His stance has always been that he's going to be. His thing is, he says, I'm going to be ready by week one. So, you know, that to me, that means he's not going to be ready. They're not going to push him to be ready for camp because he hasn't been out there at all. So I said during the offseason, I don't expect him to play one preseason game, not because he's not going to be ready, but why risk it?
Why push it? Yeah.
So I think what you're going to do, don't be alarmed if he starts on PUP. But he'll still count against the 90. That means he can start practicing any time. But you know, if you get to August 25, 26, and he still hasn't put on a helmet yet, that means there's maybe been a hiccup. But they don't anticipate that.
Okay. So Dante Fowler, again, look, we can't know too much about what's going on with Dante. We know he's had the surgery.
Yeah.
And like you said, he's back in the belt. I saw him last week wandering around a little bit too. And Cindric, you know, you can see him walking around the building mm-hmm. from time to time. So he's around.
Yeah, and he put up a couple of videos on Twitter last week of him outside on the practice fields, slapping the tackling dummies and showing some agility. I thought those were very positive signs.
No, they definitely are. I want to get into a couple Jaguars things with you before we get done today, Ryan. One of which is the big announcement yesterday for the city of Jacksonville, and it is really cool that Notre Dame and Navy are going to be playing here. We're obviously a Navy town. It's one of the most traditional rivalries in college football. The idea that it's going to be here, I know there's, like we said, we got the Navy here. Notre Dame is a nationwide fan base. It's going to get a lot of national attention, so it's really cool that game's going to be here next year. From a Jaguars perspective, though, they're planning on playing that thing the week after Florida, Georgia. We know the Jaguars have that London trip that's usually scheduled right around Florida, Georgia. Then they have the bye after they play the London game. What does that do from a scheduling perspective for the Jaguars when they're looking at next year?
Well, I think it takes 3 weekends off the books because they don't want to play here the week before Florida, Georgia, like they did 2 years ago, because they need time to put in the extra stands.
Right.
And they didn't have the cabanas or the pools available for a game. So they want to avoid that. So I see, so that means a road game, a London game, and a bye. I think the most likely scenario would be London, bye, then road, because they want to be able to leave from Jacksonville straight to London if they go later in the week like they are last year. So what my deal is, but also week 17 of the 2016 season falls on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when is the Taxslayer Bowl going to be played? If I'm the Jags, I want to make sure that I'm available to play at home on January 1st. That game may mean something.
Right.
You know, so if they move the bowl game to January 2nd or 3rd, you know, if I'm the Jaguars, to say, hey, you know, I'm playing ball with you on those 3 weekends in the middle of the year, but we want to make sure our stadium is available for the last game of the season.
Right. I would assume that there wouldn't be any serious consideration to playing a game here. I would think after Florida, Georgia, they're going to take down whatever the expansions are for Navy and Notre Dame, so it'll be what it is. As far as basically the setup that they have for Jaguars games for Navy and Notre Dame, who knows if the pools and cabanas and all that stuff will be open for any of that. I'm sure.
Because smart, they will.
Right. I'm sure that's a decision that's still coming. But would there be any possibility of playing the Navy Notre Dame game that Saturday and the Jaguars home game the next day?
I got that question yesterday. I think logistically it is possible. But if I'm the Jags, I would, you know, what condition is the field going to be in? How about if it rains a lot that Saturday during the game? You know, you have to reline the field a little bit with the hash marks. So if I'm the Jags, I wouldn't want to play one of my 7 home games a day after a college game like that.
No, I probably wouldn't either. It's just, I know we dealt with it this year when the schedule came out. You're talking about seeing the team once in 5 weeks. And with Navy and Notre Dame coming here, again, you're talking about probably seeing them once in about 5 weeks, which for a fan base, I can get where that would get frustrating, right? The middle of the season, especially next year when I think, depending on the outcome of the 2015 season, but if they do get to the point where they're going 6-10, 7-9, there's going to be a high level of excitement for this football team going into the 2016 season, hopefully. And it'll be that much more frustrating when you got to deal with basically the team being away from home for a month and having no opportunity to see them. The season's short enough without skipping a whole month of having the chance to go see them.
Yeah, and you know, when you play that game in London and have a bye, the schedule's never going to look great
right
in the middle of the year because that takes away a couple weeks. But Brent Martineau weighs in, says, you know, Gator Bowl's not on the first anymore. Do we know it's definitely going to be on the second? Could it be on December 31st? Is the date fluid? If it's on the 31st, I go back to the torn up field stuff. You know, if they move it to the second, is the Gator Bowl crazy about having their game after, you know, less than ideal conditions because of the weather and stuff? So I think there's some negotiations. I think there's some logistics that need to be figured out there.
Sure, sure. And we'll see what the date of the Gator Bowl is going to be next year, but it's not necessarily on the first anymore, as far as when that game is played. Talking about that 6-10, 7-9, 8-8, whatever you think they're going to get to, we've talked about where we expect there to be some improvement statistically. I think they can't help but improve from a sack number perspective. They're not going to get worse on the offensive line.
Thanks.
As far as giving up sacks, 71 is one of the worst totals in NFL history. So they're probably not going to get worse there. They're probably going to improve there. You would think the passing numbers would improve just because you got a bunch of guys going from year one to year two. That doesn't mean that I think everybody going from year one to year two is going to pan out the way that everyone expects them to. Like, the highest level of expectation, I'm not saying that I expect everyone to live up to that, but I think they're all going to be better enough that the numbers in the passing game should improve, especially with the addition of Julius Thomas. The offensive line is better, so I think the running game should be better than it was, although the run game wasn't as bad.
The run game was bad if you didn't include the quarterback.
Right. And I think they wound up like 21st in the league in rushing, which when I saw it, I was like, how'd they get the 21st? It didn't feel like they could run the ball at all for most of the season last year, except for that there was that short little brief window where Denard was an effective running back for them, and they looked like an effective offense, by the way, for the 3 weeks where Denard was an effective runner for this football team too. So hopefully T.J. Yeldon gives us some of that. We've talked about some of our reservations on defense. Before we get done, what do you think are the areas where you have to be improved as the Jacksonville Jaguars going forward if you are going to see that jump from 3 to 6 or 7?
Offense, got to score more points, got to give up less sacks, got to be better in red zone. On defense, more interceptions, try to get to that sack threshold, and also you got to be better on third down. I think 29th in the league last year. They're always, I mean, a lot of third and short, so I think you got to be better first down defense as well. So those are five things off right off the hop. But I think takeaways and will lead into points. So on defense, if I had to point to one thing, get the ball more. Give the offense some short fields. You know, don't, I mean, a turnover is good whenever, but if it comes at your own 5, it's not as great if it comes at their 35.
Right.
So, and this happened definitely 2 years ago when a lot of the turnovers came at the end of the long drives. That's why their red zone percentage on defense was okay. So, you know, more big turnovers.
Big turn, like momentum changing turnovers in games, right? I think their turnover differential wound up at -6, I want to say, last year, somewhere in that kind of general area, which was in the mid-20s, I think, in the league. If I saw it correctly earlier this week, the middle of the pack...
25th.
Yeah, like 16th in the league was 0.
Yeah.
It was even between the two sides. And I think that number can get to around there if the interception number kind of normalizes for this football team. They're a team that I think they had 6 last year. JT Thomas was the only one with 2, right? And the middle of the pack in the league is like 13 or 14 interceptions. So if they normalize that kind of number and everything else stays the same, right, then they are a team that's finishing right there in the middle of the pack. And when you go into games, preparing for games, we talk about keys to the game every week, right? And you might as well just get ready for it. Turnover differential is going to be one of the first things out of anybody's mouth. But turnover differential... And this is a team that they need to improve in that as far as forcing bad decisions by opposing teams. And they need to improve, like you said, just score, right? They've been so bad on the offensive side of the ball for so long that I think a lot of fans around here have forgotten what it looks like to have an effective offense wearing that uniform because they haven't seen it, I don't feel like, in 6 or 7 years.
Well, you know, look at the Cleveland game last year is – they capitalized on a couple of short fields after the muff punt, then the Telvin interception that put the game away. They punched both of those in for touchdowns.
Yep.
So this, you know, this about every team is able to get a touchdown if you start at the 15 or in.
Yeah.
So
the Giants game was that story too.
Yeah. So shorter fields will help you. You know, defensive touchdowns. But I think getting Colvin for a full season, I think that's going to help the interception total. I think House has a chance to get 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. So I think if they can double their interception total, that only gives them 12. That's still not good enough.
Right.
So they have a lot of work to do there.
No, they got a ton of work, and that's kind of this exercise, right? Like when you look at where they were in 2014, it's like, all right, what's it take to get just to the middle of the league in a lot of these categories? And it's like, ooh. The idea that they're going to be able to do that in 1 year, to turn it around in all these areas at the same time, right, it just seems a little far-fetched when you actually look at the numbers. I think that expecting this team to win 6 games is reasonable, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable for this team going into its third year. I think expecting this team to win 8, based on the mountain that there is to climb, I understand why fans are hungry for it. I don't know that it's a reasonable expectation for this team because of just how vast the gulf is between where they have been and where they need to be to get there.
I mean, you look at Jags last year, 289 yards a game on offense, 31st in the league. Oakland was last. To get up to the middle of the pack, they'd have to improve by 60 yards.
That's a lot.
That's basically a touchdown drive, which parlays into the points, but
right,
that's a lot of yards.
No, it's a bunch of yards. And I'm not saying that I don't think they can. I want to be clear on that, too. I'm not saying that I don't think they can. I think it's a difficult thing to do, in 1 year, especially with a new offense coming in. You are talking about a bunch of second-year guys. Look, they got to be the men, right? These guys got to be the answer for this football team and this franchise, and you hope that they start showing themselves to be that in 2015. I think they're going to take a step forward. I'm not sure how big of a step it's going to be. If it's the type of step that gets them to be in an 8-8, 9-7 team, you're talking about historical steps forward for this football team in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. Is what the expectation would be for them to get to that kind of level from where they were in 2014 to 2015. Not saying it can't happen. I'm saying that expecting it to happen is a tall task. But you're a fan. You can expect whatever the heck you want to expect out of this football team. And nobody, at least I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong with whatever your expectations happen to be. If you want to join in on the fan feedback spotlight today, you can. We're asking you, outside of the win total, where do you expect the biggest progress statistically for the Jacksonville Jaguars in this 2015 season? We'll get to some of your answers coming up here in just a moment as we wrap things up here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. That's Tony Rhino Halloran here with you. Mike Dempsey out today and tomorrow. I'm going to be out next week, so it's either J.P. Shattuck or John Osier joining me tomorrow, where I will have a full-on case of senioritis. I'm going to be ready to be gone because it means, let's see, 9 days? 9 days where I don't have to work after that, which is a long, long time for me. And I'm getting the opportunity to go see Team USA in the Gold Cup. I actually scheduled my vacation around that so I could go see an elimination game up in Baltimore that weekend.
Oh, at M&T Bank.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a cool environment.
So I'm heading up there to watch Team USA, hopefully that weekend. They almost blew it the other night by giving up the equalizer late. They could have. They were not better than Honduras for the last half hour of that game. But they're back in action tomorrow night, and I'll get to see them up there in the Gold Cup.
So who's going to do the Fat Tony show next Tuesday?
It's actually the only show I'm doing.
All right.
The entire week is I'm going down to Orlando Monday, and I'm coming back on Tuesday. And then Tuesday night I'm going to do my 2 hours. And then Wednesday I'm flying out to head up to D.C. I've never been to the Capitol.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm really looking forward to wandering around for a couple days. I'm going to a Nationals game on Friday night, going to the soccer game on Saturday. They'll have a couple games there at the stadium that weekend. So I'm pumped, man. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow somebody's going to have to keep me focused.
J.P. Shadrick will do that.
All right, for the 2 hours here on the show. Right now, let's get into the fan feedback spotlight. The Tom Bush family of dealerships asks Jaguars fans every day, what drives you? Today in the Tom Bush fan feedback spotlight, we ask you, outside of wins, where do you expect the biggest leap forward statistically for the Jaguars in the upcoming 2015 season? Some of the answers we got today from Will. He said interceptions from Cristiano. He said touchdown to interception ratio for Blake Bortles. For Colby, it better be the entire offense.
You didn't answer the question.
From Duval Doom, it better be touchdowns, frankly. From Viper Driver, wide receivers will double their output from last year. From Blake Bortles Facts, who's becoming one of my favorites, there will be more Bortles touchdowns. Watch out, Brady. 51 touchdowns at least for Bortles. I know the tweet that he has pinned to the top of his page is something along the Blake Bortles Facts, this is something along the lines of Blake Bortles and Tom Brady have combined for 4 Super Bowl wins, 2 MVPs, and 10 Pro Bowl appearances.
That's not bad.
Which is factually true. From Irish Jaguar, sacks conceded. From Jason, number of playoff games. Boom. From Cam, interceptions and points off turnovers. Offense will be able to score more effectively when defense gets those turnovers. From Nate, touchdowns and third down conversions. From Daniel, most definitely on the offensive line, reduction in sacks, giving up an increase in rushing yards. From Eric, I'm expecting to see more yards per game offensively, which should in turn lead to more points scored. From Alex, interceptions, expecting a huge leap from this secondary. A couple from Facebook as well. From Jamie, Blake Bortles to have a better touchdown interception ratio. From Aaron, we got offensive passing / rushing yards, so just the offensive yardage. From Michael, running game, that will solve a few other problems as well. And from Joshua, more consistency in that running game, which in turn should assist in the defense, improving all across the board, as well as Bortles' turnovers being reduced. So I think there's a reasonable expectation for this team to improve in a lot of those areas because they're bottom feeders in a lot of those areas. They got nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, I mean, the listeners could have gone a lot of different directions, and they did, because all of them are legitimate.
No, they really are, and I think if they can maintain about what they were on defense last year, I think the turnover numbers normalize a little bit for it. It was just kind of it's quirky for you to only get six interceptions in a year, especially when you have the kind of sack numbers that the Jaguars had, that they just didn't force more bad decisions from opposing quarterbacks is a little bit surprising given those two numbers. But I think the offense is where a lot of the improvement is expected for this football team as well. Not only with the guys going from year one to year two, but the addition of Julius Thomas. You got Mercedes in a role that I think he should be really comfortable with as far as being that second option blocking tight end. That's a good look for this Jaguars offense when you can put Julius Thomas and Mercedes Lewis on the field together, hopefully with T.J. Yeldon as an effective guy in the backfield. And Allen Robinson, I think we all expect to be kind of the guy in the passing game for this Jaguars team this year.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if it gets to a point where this team is in a competitive game a couple weeks from now. How does the offense look like? Who emerges as playmakers? Because with so many young guys, they are going to separate themselves a little bit. You know, everybody thinks Allen Robinson. I agree with that. But what is this year? What does this year do for Marquise Lee? Like Mercedes Lewis, how does he handle this role? How does the offensive line gel right away? So a lot of questions on offense, but I also think a lot of reasons to think why the right pieces are in place.
Sure. What do you have coming up on Jacksonville.com here this week and over the next couple weeks?
Sunday, I have part three of our summer series, like sort of expectations for first round picks around the league. Then Hayes Carlion's got a story on some of the a younger Jaguars fan group in their 20s. He went and visited them during the draft party and sort of how they're trying to expand sort of a new generation of Jags fans. So that'll be interesting. And so those two big things.
Very cool. Are you you going to see Minions this weekend? Are you a Minions guy?
No.
No?
No.
You're not going to see the little adorable yellow squeakies?
Well, if I did, I'd probably think it would be better than the Adam Sandler movie that's come out that maybe looks like the worst movie in history.
Oh, Pixels? Pixels?
It looks awful.
As I was telling you and Tyler a moment ago, I think it should inspire a top five here for this show, and I think it's a pretty good top five. If you ask me, from the moment I saw that preview, I don't think the movie looks any good at all, like if you ask me. But from the moment I saw that preview, my thought was, what is the most diabolical game, like arcade-style game, they could put in front of you and say, you either get through this or die? And I think that Donkey Kong is towards the very, very top of that. Maybe Tempest would be a little bit higher for me.
I like Pac-Man.
But Donkey Kong is ridiculously hard. Pac-Man, at least there was a pattern that like you could learn. Yeah. I've seen some of the science behind Donkey Kong, and it's like guys have to have timing down to the thousandth of a second, right, in order to get through some of the levels in that thing, which is ridiculous. You'd be dead. Like the whole world's population essentially would be wiped out by Donkey Kong alone, and I'm sure they're going to find a way to beat it in Pixels, because I'm guessing at the end of that movie, humanity wins.
I'm guessing Adam Sandler does not die.
Right.
His character.
Right. I'm guessing, although it would be quite a trick, right, if Pixels actually turned out to be one of the most like dramatically moving movies of the year, where Adam Sandler, the entire human race, is wiped out, right? Like, you build all this hope, and then, bam, you pull the floor right out from underneath them.
It wouldn't be good business.
Probably not, although no one's tried it.
Yeah.
So we don't know if it would be bad business, right? No one's really tried doing that kind of thing in that kind of movie yet, although you're going to have kids in the theater. I'm not sure you want to
freaking out,
traumatize kids in quite that way. All right, Ryan, thanks for joining me today.
Sure.
We'll check out everything coming up on Jacksonville.com throughout this weekend.
Is Hacker Crosstalk coming up?
Yeah, we got three more weeks before we are ready for training camp here in Jacksonville. We'll crosstalk it up with XL Primetime, Joe C. Tewig, and Hacker. So for myself, for Ryan O'Halloran, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, for a vacationing and playing Sawgrass, Mike Dempsey, poor guy, having to go play Sawgrass today. We say good day to you. We'll welcome in the boys of XL Primetime next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.